All right, Smarties. I admit it. You got me. The game's up. Hi, I'm Dr. Jim McCourt, PhD, host of Reasonable Radio. And I'm here to tell you that I'm not real. That's right. I'm a fake, a sham, a parody. All the words I'm about to say are actual words. But I'm not an actual person. We all know the people on the radio like Rush Limbaugh and used car salesmen are trustworthy and real. But I'm different. You should definitely not believe in me. Why? Because I'm making jokes. Stupid jokes. Fake jokes. I'm acting. Badly. I don't even know how to act. I never got my degree. So don't listen to what I say and freak out. Don't go doing anything unreasonable. Like talking to other people about my ideas. In fact, you're probably better off not listening to me at all. Because I'm not who I say I am. Okay. Now that we have this legalistic mumbo-jumbo out of the way, it's time to get down. It's time to let loose. It's time to get really, really reasonable. Here we go. Time for Reasonable Radio. Good afternoon and welcome to Reasonable Radio. I'm your host, Dr. Jim McCourt, PhD, coming to you live from the Hudson Studios of 90.7 WGXC Community Radio Acra. That's right. It's time for episode number 2. Smarties, it has been a fascinating month since episode 1. Today, I've got an amazing show for you. We're going to have a guest on the show. His name's Derek Jensen. We're going to get to him in the second half of the show. But before that, we're going to hear from a TED Talk that was censored. That's right. We are getting down and dirty today as we get reasonable here on Reasonable Radio. Smarties, one thing I'm excited about is that I entered the world of social media. That's right. I now have a Facebook page, Reasonable Radio. You can search us on Facebook. One thing I noticed on Facebook, though, is that there's no button for things I don't like. If anyone can find that button, just let me know. Now, speaking of things I don't like, we're going to have two main portions of the show today. After I get to the news, we're going to listen to a talk that was given by Rupert Sheldrake, a pseudoscientist posing as a scientist, speaking about something he knows nothing about. So all the physics teachers out there, the chemistry teachers, you need to grab your children and cover their ears. And after that, when I bring Jensen on, Jensen is another one of these science critics we need to watch out for. Smarties, I know you tune in to hear Dr. Jim keep things reasonable. In this crazy world, the last thing we need is these kooks getting their message out there, passing off as truth. All right, well, enough of that. Let's get to the thank yous. One of the great things about being on the radio, the fan base has been growing on an exponential scale. I don't know if all of you know what that is, but that basically means that I've been getting really, really popular. And there's no greater evidence. There's a stronghold here in the local area, a stronghold out in Old Chatham. A bunch of folks there were excited about my news piece last week about the local sighting of the Higgs boson. They're so excited they made me a shirt, a work shirt, with a name tag that says Higgs boson on it. How about that, huh? You can see a picture of it on my Facebook page. I'm going to wear it next time. I haven't had the chance to get it yet, but I'm going to get it. I also got my brain hat on. This was sent to me by a young fan down in Mercersburg, Pennsylvania, out in the country. It shows you, even these rural folks are getting into Dr. Jim, getting into the world of reason. I got my brain hat on. I am ready. All right, let's get to quick headlines from the world of science. As I mentioned, there was a censoring episode. Reasonable censoring, I say, from the TED Talk folks. We're going to get to that. But also, scientists, and this is real, scientists have announced that, you know, I might even, hold on. Scientists have announced that the universe is 80 million years older than they once thought. Now, if that doesn't just shake up your world, I don't know what will. They've also found that the universe has been undergoing inflation. And so part of my job is bringing things down simple for you. What that inflation means is that if you had a dollar back at the Big Bang, it would have bought you a whole giant, hot, steaming universe. Now all you get is a steaming cup of coffee at McDonald's. That's basically what that means. Let's see here. Other great advancements in science in the past month. Oh, that's right. It now seems possible, according to the Huffington Post, a post on the Huffington Post. I know a lot of my listeners are big fans of the Huffington Post. According to them, species that go extinct can now be brought back by scientists. That's right. So soon you're going to have a mail order catalog. You're going to be able to order yourself a brontosaurus, a dodo bird. If you're hungry, you can grow yourself an Angus cow. You know, this is why, folks, this is why I am on the air, for exciting news like this. You know, one day you're hearing the bad news about how all these species are going extinct, and the next, science is bringing them all back. Woo! I'm excited. All right, Smarties, we're going to take a quick music break, and I'm going to be back. We're going to have to make things a little more dark on the station today. I'm sorry about that. I'll be right back here on Reasonable Radio. That's right. Don't you tell me to smile, Smarties. I am not going to smile until this pseudoscientific mumbo-jumbo is knocked out, until these woo-woo wackos are put in their place. you know, I'm not normally a fan of censorship. But in this case, I think you're going to agree with me. This is stuff that needs to not be getting out there. Now, before I get into that, Smarties, here at the station today, we've had a couple times when we've gone off the air. So I know if we're going through this sensitive material and all of a sudden you don't hear good old Dr. Jim anymore, don't worry. We will be back. We've got technicians lined up all over the place. We've got them, they're triangulating their positions. They're talking on their beepers, high tech stuff. Okay, so if we go off the air, we will be back. Don't worry. There's one thing about community radio is that we are high tech and we are well funded. That's right. By the way, that reminds me, thanks for any of Dr. Jim's fans who helped in the recent pledge drive for WGXC. All right, now back to the topic at hand. Rupert Sheldrake, everyone. This guy has been around since the 80s. And not everyone here in the USA, where most of my listeners are familiar with Mr. Sheldrake because thanks to good, solid, educational progressive reform like No Child Left Behind, we don't have to worry about scientists like Rupert Sheldrake getting into our school's curriculums. If you're going, well, how can he be that bad, Jim? It's Dr. Jim, first of all. But here's how he can be that bad. He tried to publish a book called A New Science of Life back in Britain. He's from the UK. He's got an accent. So back in 1981, he published this book. And here's what they said about him, the editor of Nature, not just anyone. Here's what the editor of Nature had to say about him in writing. Even bad books should not be burned. Works such as Mein Kampf have become historical documents for those concerned with the pathology of politics. But what is to be made of Dr. Rupert Sheldrake's book, A New Science of Life? This infuriating tract has been widely hailed by newspapers and popular science magazines as the answer to materialistic science, and it is now well on the way to becoming a point of reference for the motley crew of creationists, anti-reductionists, neo-Lamarckians, and the rest. The author, by training a biochemist and by demonstration a knowledgeable man, is, however, misguided. His book is the best candidate for burning there has been for many years. That's right, Smarties. A candidate for burning. So it's been 32 years since then, and Sheldrake's still getting himself censored. What this guy is thinking, I don't know. I've got a book here in the studio by Sheldrake's called Morphic Resonance, The Nature of Formative Causation. Now, that probably doesn't mean anything to you, and that's good. Because look who's on the cover. None other than the enemy of science, the arch enemy, Deepak Chopra. Here's what Chopra has to say. Rupert Sheldrake's contributions will be recognized one day on the same level as those of Newton and Darwin. Okay, whatever, Deepak. Shh. So we got this guy's books. Smarties, I'm just so worked up here trying to run this show and dealing with such hot content. We got Deepak Chopra out against Rupert. We got the editor of Nature magazine going out of his way to help us out by burning his books. And now we got TED Talk censoring him. So I've set the stage for you. Now, if there are any earth science teachers, if there are any religion teachers out there, if you got children, you might want to take them down into the bunker underneath the house. This is not everyday material. This is like plutonium. This is like plutonium after watching Beavis and Butthead. It's like, it's stupid, it's radioactive. All right, you get the point. It's time for Rupert. I'm going to turn him on and see if I can run this board. Let's see here.
The science delusion is the belief that science already understands the nature of reality in principle, leaving only the details to be filled in.
Yeah, and that's right.
This is a very widespread belief in our society. It's the kind of belief system of people who say, I don't believe in God, I believe in science. It's a belief system which has now been spread to the entire world.
Dang right it has.
But there's a conflict in the heart of science between science as a method of inquiry based on reason, evidence, hypothesis, and collective investigation.
Reasonable
and
radio.
Science as a belief system or a worldview. And unfortunately, the worldview aspect of science has come to inhibit and constrict the free inquiry, which is the very lifeblood of the scientific endeavor. Since the late 19th century, science has been conducted under the aspect of a belief system or worldview, which is essentially that of materialism, philosophical materialism.
That's right.
And the sciences are now wholly owned subsidiaries of the materialist worldview. I think that as we break out of it, the sciences will be regenerated. What I do in my book, The Science Delusion, which is called Science Set Free in the United States, is take the 10 dogmas or assumptions of science and turn them into questions, seeing how well they stand up if you look at them scientifically.
Yeah, you see what he's doing here?
None of them stand up very well.
Don't listen to this man.
What I'm going to do is first run through what these 10 dogmas are, and then I'll only have time to discuss one or two of them in a bit more detail.
Do not attack
but
the Ten Commandments
of science.
But
essentially, the 10 dogmas, which are the default worldview of most educated people all over the world, are first that nature is mechanical or machine-like. The universe is like a machine. Animals and plants are like machines. We're like machines. In fact, we are machines. We're lumbering robots, in Richard Dawkins' vivid phrase.
Do not make fun of
with
Dawkins.
With brains that are genetically programmed computers.
Must destroy Sheldrake.
Second, matter is unconscious. The whole universe is made up of unconscious matter. There's no consciousness in stars, in galaxies, in planets, in animals, in plants. And there ought not to be any in us either, if this theory is true. So a lot of the philosophy of mind over the last 100 years is being trying to prove that we're not really conscious at all.
Don't tell me I'm conscious, Sheldrake.
So the matter's unconscious, then the laws of nature are fixed. This is dogma 3. The laws of nature are the same now as they were at the time of the Big Bang, and they'll be the same forever. Not just the laws, but the constants of nature are fixed, which is why they are called constants. Dogma 4, the total amount of matter and energy is always the same. It never changes in total quantity, except at the moment of the Big Bang, when it all sprang into existence from nowhere in a single instant.
That's right.
The fifth dogma
sounds
is that
exciting.
Nature's purposeless. There are no purposes in all nature, and the evolutionary purpose, the evolutionary process has no purpose or direction. Dogma 6, biological heredity is material. Everything you inherit is in your genes, or in epigenetic modifications of the genes, or in cytoplasmic inheritance. It's material.
I want to just cut in. I also inherited not only genes, but I inherited an amazing picture of Charles Darwin from my uncle. Okay, here we go.
Number 7, memories are stored inside your brain as material traces. Somehow everything you remember is in your brain in modified nerve endings, phosphorylated proteins. No one knows how it works, but nevertheless, almost everyone in the scientific world believes it must be in the brain. Dogma 8, your mind is inside your head.
Where
all
else
your
would
consciousness
it be?
Is the activity of your brain and nothing more. Dogma 9, which follows from Dogma 8, psychic phenomena like telepathy are impossible. Your thoughts and intentions cannot have any effect at a distance because your mind's inside your head. Therefore, all the apparent evidence for telepathy and other psychic phenomena is illusory. People believe these things happen, but it's just because they don't know enough about statistics, or they're deceived by coincidences, or it's wishful thinking.
Hold on, I'm thinking about and stopping talking.
Mechanistic medicine is the only kind that really works. That's why governments only fund research into mechanistic medicine and ignore complementary and alternative therapies. Those can't possibly really work because they're not mechanistic. They may appear to work because people would have got better anyway, or because of the placebo effect. But the only kind that really works is mechanistic medicine. Well, this is the default worldview, which is held by almost all educated people all over the world. It's the basis of the educational system, the National Health Service, the Medical Research Council, governments. It's just the default worldview of educating.
Are we going to take this, Smarties? Are you
but
hearing this?
I think
this?
Every one of these dogmas
he's talking about us.
Is very, very questionable. And when you look at it, they fall apart. I'm going to take first the idea that the laws of nature are fixed. This is a hangover from an older worldview before the 1960s, when the Big Bang theory came in. People thought that the whole universe was eternal, governed by eternal mathematical laws. When the Big Bang came in, then that assumption continued, even though the Big Bang revealed a universe that's radically evolutionary, about 14 billion years old, growing and developing and evolving for 14 billion years, growing and cooling, and more structures and patterns appear within it. But the idea is all the laws of nature were completely fixed at the moment of the Big Bang, like a cosmic Napoleonic code. As my friend Terence McKenna used to say, modern science is based on the principle, give us one free miracle and we'll explain the rest. And the one free miracle is the appearance of all the matter and energy in the universe and all the laws that govern it from nothing in a single instant. Well, in an evolutionary universe, why shouldn't the laws themselves evolve? After all, human laws do, and the idea of laws of nature is based on a metaphor with human laws. It's a very anthropocentric metaphor. Only humans have laws. In fact, only civilized societies have laws. As C.S. Lewis once said, to say that a stone falls to earth because it's obeying a law makes it a man and even a citizen. It's a metaphor that we've got so used to, we forget it's a metaphor. In an evolving universe, I think a much better idea is the idea of habits. I think the habits of nature evolve. The regularities of nature are essentially habitual. This was an idea put forward at the beginning of the 20th century by the American philosopher C.S. Peirce. And it's an idea which various other philosophers have entertained, and it's one which I myself have developed into a scientific hypothesis, the hypothesis of morphic resonance, which is the basis of these evolving habits. According to this hypothesis, everything in nature has a kind of collective memory. Resonance occurs on the basis of similarity. As a young giraffe embryo grows in its mother's womb, it tunes in to the morphic resonance of previous giraffes. It draws on that collective memory, it grows like a giraffe, and it behaves like a giraffe because it's drawing on this collective memory. It has to have the right genes to make the right proteins, but genes, in my view, are grossly overrated. They only account for the proteins that the organism can make, not the shape or the form or the behavior. Every species has a kind of collective memory. Even crystals do. This theory predicts that if you make a new kind of crystal for the first time, the very first time you make it, it won't have an existing habit. But once it crystallizes, then the next time you make it, there'll be an influence from the first crystals to the second ones all over the world by morphic resonance. It'll crystallize a bit easier. The third time, there'll be an influence from the first and second crystals. There is, in fact, good evidence that new compounds get easier to crystallize all around the world, just as this theory would predict. It also predicts that if you train animals to learn a new trick, for example, rats learn a new trick in London, then all around the world, rats of the same breed should learn the same trick quicker just because the rats have learned it here. And surprisingly, there's already evidence that this actually happens. Anyway, that's my own hypothesis in a nutshell of morphic resonance. Everything depends on evolving habits, not on fixed laws. But I want to spend a few moments on the constants of nature too, because these are again assumed to be constant. Things like the gravitational constant, the speed of light, are called the fundamental constants.
Smarties, I'm back. I've been letting you listen to that without my input, but before we go any further, just really watch out for this part. You can already tell what a trickster this guy is. Just beware. Be wary of anything you believe from this guy. All right, here we go.
Are they really constant? Well, when I got interested in this question, I tried to find out. They're given in physics handbooks. Handbooks of physics list the existing fundamental constants, tell you their value. But I wanted to see if they had changed. So I got the old volumes of physical handbooks. I went to the Patent Office Library here in London, and they're the only place I could find that kept the old volumes. Normally people throw them away when the new values come out. They throw away the old ones. When I did this, I found that the speed of light dropped between 1928 and 1945 by about 20 kilometers per second. It's a huge drop because they're given with errors of any fractions of decimal points of error. And yet, all over the world, it dropped, and they were all getting values very similar to each other with tiny errors. And then in 1945, it went up, 48, it went up again. And then people started getting very similar values again. I was very intrigued by this, and I couldn't make sense of it. So I went to see the head of metrology at the National Physical Laboratory in Teddington. Metrology is the science in which people measure constants.
Yeah, someone who's doing real
and
science.
And I asked him about this. I said, what do you make of this drop in the speed of light between 1928 and 1945? And he said, oh dear, he said, you've uncovered the most embarrassing episode in the history of our science.
Oh, silly us. Silly us, you know.
I said, well, could the speed of light have actually dropped? And that would have amazing implications if so. He said, no, of course it couldn't have actually dropped. It's a constant. So, well then how do you explain the fact everyone was finding it going much slower during that period? Is it because they were fudging their results to get what was just produced minds of physicists? We don't like to use the word fudge. I said, well, what do you prefer? He said, well, we prefer to call it intellectual phase locking.
Yes. There we go. I don't know why those people are laughing. That was not funny.
So I said, well, if it was going on then,
funny.
How can we be so sure it's not going on today? And that the present values are produced by intellectual phase locking. And he said, oh, we know that's not the case. I said, how do we know? He said, we've solved the problem. And I said, well, how? He said, well, we fixed the speed of light by definition in 1972.
Exactly.
So I said, but it might still change. He said, yes, but we'd never know it because we've defined the meter in terms of the speed of light. So the units had changed with it. So he looked very pleased about that. They'd fixed that problem.
Right, so 100 meters now is a little different than 100
meters
back then.
But I said, well, then what about big G? The gravitational constant, known in the trade as big G, is written with a capital G, Newton's universal gravitational constant. That's varied by more than 1.3% in recent years. And it seems to vary from place to place and from time to time. And he said, oh, well, those are just errors. And unfortunately, there are quite big errors with big G. So I said, well, what if it's really changing? I mean, perhaps it is really changing. And then I looked at how they do it. What happens is they measure it in different labs. They get different values on different days, and then they average them. And then other labs around the world do the same, and they come out usually with a rather different average. And then the International Committee on Metrology meets every 10 years or so and average the ones from labs around the world to come up with the value of big G. But what if G were actually fluctuating? What if it changed? There's already evidence, actually, that it changes throughout the day and throughout the year. What if the Earth, as it moves through the galactic environment, went through patches of dark matter or other environmental factors that could alter it? Maybe they all change together. What if these errors are going up together and down together? For more than 10 years, I've been trying to persuade metrologists to look at the raw data. In fact, I'm now trying to persuade them to put it online on the internet with the dates and the actual measurements and see if they're correlated.
We're too busy.
To see if they're all up at one time, all down at another.
We're too busy to be going on the internet.
Together, and that would tell us something very, very interesting. But no one has done this. They haven't done it because G's are constant.
That's right. Stay with your own kind, Sheldrake.
You see, here's a very simple example of where a dogmatic assumption actually inhibits inquiry. I myself think that the constants may vary quite considerably, within narrow limits, but they may all be varying. And I think the day will come when scientific journals like Nature have a weekly report on the constants, like stock market reports in newspapers. You know, this week, big G was slightly up, the charge on the electron was down, the speed of light held steady, and so on.
They're not enjoying this. They're not.
So,
trust me.
That's one area, just one area where I think thinking less dogmatically could open things up. One of the biggest areas is the nature of the mind. This is the most unsolved problem, as Graham just said, that science simply can't deal with the fact we're conscious. And it can't deal with the fact that our thoughts don't seem to be inside our brains. Our experiences don't all seem to be inside our brain. Your image of me now doesn't seem to be inside your brain, yet the official view is there's a little Rupert somewhere inside your head, and everything else in this room is inside your head. Your experience is inside your brain.
There is not a little Rupert inside my head, I'll tell you that.
Vision involves an outward projection of images. What you're seeing is in your mind, but not inside your head. Our minds are extended beyond our brains in the simplest act of perception.
It's almost over, Smarties.
I think that we project out the images we're seeing, and these images touch what we're looking at. If I look at you from behind, you don't know I'm there. Could I affect you? Could you feel my gaze?
No.
There's a great deal of evidence that people can. The sense of being stared at is an extremely common experience, and recent experimental research suggests it's real. Animals seem to have it too. I think it probably evolved in the context of predator-prey relationships. Prey animals that could feel the gaze of a predator would survive better than those that couldn't. This would lead to a whole new way of thinking about ecological relationships between predators and prey.
You're making yourself
also about the extent
into a prey
of our
animal, Sheldrake.
If we look at distant stars, I think our minds reach out in a sense to touch those stars and literally extend out over astronomical distances. They're not just inside our heads. Now, it may seem astonishing that this is a topic of debate in the 21st century. We know so little about our own minds that where our images are is a hot topic of debate within consciousness studies right now. I don't have time to deal with any more of these dogmas, but
thank goodness.
Every single one of them is questionable. If one questions it, new forms of research, new possibilities open up. And I think as we question these dogmas that have held back science so long, science will undergo a reflowering, a renaissance. I'm a total believer in the importance of science. I've spent my whole life as a research scientist, my whole career. But I think by moving beyond these dogmas, it can be regenerated once again and become interesting and, I hope, life-affirming. Thank you.
Someone shut off this applauding. We'll be right back, Smarties. I'm sure you're with me. Can't believe this. All right, Dr. Jim is back. I know you heard that. I know you couldn't believe it, but it's out there. This man, Rupert Sheldrake, instead of figuring out how old the universe is, important things like that, he's staring at people. That's right, he's telling us to stare at each other. He's a starophile. I don't want him staring at me. I don't want him staring at anyone. I don't want, especially not our children. He just has a lack of respect for science. We need to be taking our dogmas and inscribing them into stone. We don't have the technology to be updating our constants all the time. That's why they're called constants. Well, you can see why this man is not allowed to be taught in our schools. You can see why the good atheist secularist at TED made sure that this stuff isn't going to go up on their website. It's kind of junk. It's kind of malarkey. Well, all right. I'm going to take a deep breath. Whew. I was running around the studio. I was hopping around like an angry monkey in here. Couldn't believe what I was hearing. Got that out of our way. Now it's time. In just a minute, we're going to bring on another critic of science so we can figure out what the heck is going on in these guys' heads. We're going to have Derek Jensen on the air in just a minute. He's on hold. So stick with me, smarties. Don't lose your cool. This is an important time to learn about the craziness that's out there. We'll be right back on Reasonable Radio. All right, we're back on the air. I am Dr. Jim McCourt. This is Reasonable Radio. Now, should have Derek Jensen on the line. Derek, are you there? Well, let me see. Maybe I haven't pressed the right button in here.
Oh, hey, Derek. Can you hear me? Having a little technical difficulty. Derek, can you hear me there?
Well, that's not good. Well, I'm going to call him back. Let's see. This is one of the challenges and the excitement about being on live radio. Is you just don't know what's going to happen. Got my producer in here. Now, let me take this time to tell you a little bit about Derek. Hold on, smarties. This is embarrassing. Holy cow. And they taught me the worst thing you can have in radio is dead time. We just had a little dead time. But don't worry. All matter in the universe is dead. All right? I'm redialing here. While we're waiting to get Derek on the line, here's a little bit about him. In 2006, Derek was named Person of the Year by Press Action for the publication of his book, Endgame. He is the author of numerous books, including Endgame, Culture of Make-Believe, and Dreams. Derek's work is included in the 2012 volume, Earth at Risk, Building a Resistance Movement to Save the Planet. You can find his work at derekjensen.org. Derek, are you there? Here he is, everyone. I'm going to turn him up a little bit. Can't hear him that well. Welcome to Reasonable Radio, Derek.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being on. Well, Derek, I've introduced you as a critic of science. Is that true?
Sure.
Well, perhaps you can provide a story to my audience explaining when you went to the dark side. Were you an art major or something?
Actually, my first degree was a BS in mineral engineering physics from the Colorado School of Mines with an emphasis in BS.
Whoa. An emphasis in what?
With an emphasis in BS.
Oh.
So I was actually in the dark side, and then I decided to not go full Darth Vader, but to go on the side of life. So I have a degree in physics, and I didn't like it very much. And part of what I didn't like was that it seemed to me that, you know, it's interesting. Up until maybe, that was what, 30 years ago I got my degree, and probably up until about 10 years ago,
mm-hmm.
I would still sometimes get annoyed when I would see waves at the ocean or in a river, and I would start to see a sort of a mathematical overlay in my head.
Mm.
And
yeah, I know what you mean.
And that was that always bothered me because it was a form of distancing.
Derek, it sounds like you needed a teacher like Dr. Jim McCourt.
Don't know who Jim McCourt is.
Oh, well, that's who you're talking to.
Oh, well, maybe I do.
Dr. Jim, yeah, not all teachers are quite as reasonable as me. It sounds like it might have been just a flaw in the teaching method, you know what I mean?
Which was pretty much equation after equation after equation.
Oh, it sounds great.
I'm
not sure what you're laughing at, but, Derek, thanks for coming on the show. I just played a clip of a scientist named Rupert Sheldrake, and I played it because he was censored by the good folks at TED Talks. Now, I want to get your opinion on censorship. I'm going to tell you mine first, and then I want to get yours. So I am firmly, staunchly against censorship, except when someone says something scientists don't like. You get what I'm saying? So
yeah.
You've written some edgy books. I imagine you might have faced some tough critics in your time. Tell me your take on censorship.
I think it's actually pretty interesting that, like, for example, I'm an opponent of pornography, and I think that I'm in favor of the law going in Iceland right now, which is banning some forms of pornography. So I think there's a question of, I do believe in open inquiry. I think that's really important. And then I think also we have to have a question of social harm. And here's something else to throw in. There was this guy in World War II, Julius Streicher, who was one of the nine main war criminals tried and hanged at Nuremberg. And his crime, you know, a lot of the people was, like one of them was Jodl, who was a top general, and he got it for waging aggressive war.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the admiral of the Navy got it for that. And Hermann Göring was found guilty. He killed himself before being hanged.
Clearly, these are all criminals.
But what Julius Streicher did was he ran a newspaper, and his newspaper was completely full of hatred and vitriol against Jews. And one of the people at Nuremberg, one of the judges there, said that, or maybe it was a prosecutor, said that, he didn't actually kill anybody, and he didn't actually make the order a war to happen. But on the other hand, there would not, without his vitriol and hatred, there would not have been a mass of people who would have been willing to kill in the Nazi cause. And they hanged him for that. And I've always thought it's a really interesting case, and I've always thought, okay, I'm going to say just before I go any further that I'm not suggesting, I want to be really clear, I'm not suggesting that anybody hang what's his name, the senator from Oklahoma, who's just horrible, horrible. And this is a place you and I probably disagree. The guy's completely anti-science. He's anti-global warming. Can't remember his name right now.
Oh, yeah. That sounds horrible. I agree with you on that one.
So there's the whole question of what do you do with politicians, for example, who lie? What about advertisers who lie? I don't...
That's right. I personally don't believe in having people on the radio telling lies. or making jokes. I am all for seriousness in the media. And I agree with you. We need to get these fakers out of there.
Good. Good. Okay.
Yes. So, Derek, let me ask you this. We've been talking about some really serious stuff, but you and I think both can agree that sometimes environmentalists are like New Agers. They are willing to try anything as long as it doesn't work. You know, in science, we've always got the truth. So, and I know you hold a hard line for the truth, but you've got a good joke about environmentalists, I've heard you say. Do you remember, can you tell us that joke about how many environmentalists it takes to screw in a light bulb? Because I know it only takes one scientist.
Actually, it's to change a light bulb.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh.
It takes 10, because it takes three of them to send out internet petitions saying that the light bulb needs to change. It takes one to send a letter to the president demanding that it change. It takes one to, what, the five so far? It takes one to...
I'm writing it down. We got five.
Good.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Good. It takes one to recognize that real change only occurs when the light bulb wants to change, and you can't actually force change.
That's right. That's right.
And then it takes four more doing other things. And then it takes one to recognize the light bulb's never going to change and then to smash it.
Mm.
And the point of that is that there is a really form of magical thinking that happens in environmentalism all the time, which is we expect that if we just beg the capitalist in chief enough to do things that capitalists don't want to do, then the capitalist in chief will act against the interests of capital. And so there are a lot of environmentalists who don't question the dominant power structures, but simply expect for magic to happen simply because they assemble 1,000 or 100,000 signatures on a petition.
Now, Derek, that's a great point. I've got your book, Dreams, sitting in front of me. And speaking of environmentalism, this book is like a brick. There's like 30 trees in this book, maybe.
I think it's recycled paper.
Oh, recycled. Well, that brings up a good point.
Not really matters.
Now, I want to talk to you. That brings up a good point about lifestyle changes, because I and a lot of my smarty friends, we have been doing everything we can to save the planet. So, for example, I just bought an eco-friendly, organic, remote-controlled green microwave. And it hooks up to my iPad, and I can just tell my robo-wife to cook it, frozen burrito with it while I'm at work. Now, what do you say about this kind of progress?
I'd say that frozen burritos sound pretty terrible.
Oh, they're great.
And so you have it hooked up to your iPad. I don't know that... Do iPads have music? So you, like, listen to music while it does that? Or?
That's right. I can dance at work. I can be getting all intergalactic at work, and my burrito is being cooked at home by a robot.
And where does the energy come for this? Just wondering.
Well, the energy comes from the God particle.
There we go. See, that's one of the things that kills me about so much science, is that there are a lot of people, I mean, isn't one sort of central idea of science supposed to be that cause and effect exist, and that at least often we can attempt to understand cause and effect?
That's right.
Or mathematically describe cause and effect.
That's right. So I can make matter jump, like Richard Dawkins said, I can make matter jump through hoops on command. And I've heard your stuff. You seem to have a problem with this. Now, Derek, weren't you a high jumper?
Yes, I was.
So you're okay with making yourself jump over a bar on command, but not through hoops on command?
No, there's a difference. I was having my own body jump over a bar. I wasn't forcing someone else to jump over a bar at my whim. But I want to get back to us, and we can go that direction. I'm really happy to. But I want to go back for just a second to the whole cause and effect thing, because there seems this idea that, you know, cause and effect is really central to science, except then all of a sudden they forget that perhaps if you kill a planet, it might have some effects. Or if you industrialize, it might have some effects. Or if you destroy the oceans, it might have some effects. Or if you plant, there seems to be this understanding on some level the cause and effect is real, and then on some other level, they will throw out genetically modified organisms into the world and pretend there won't be an effect. Or, I mean, I just read actually this morning that the air pollution in Beijing is so bad that it kills, I don't know if it's Beijing or maybe it's all of China, I just saw the headline, that it kills 1.2 million people per year. And there are parts of China that are so polluted that, I knew this from before, that there are no flowering plants there anymore because all the pollinators are dead.
That sounds like a problem that science can solve. If you just, Derek, you just got to stick with us a little longer, and we are going to solve these things for you. What are you so worried about?
Well, that's the thing, is that one of my central problems with science is that it is aimed toward, quotes around this word, improving the human condition. And it's not aimed toward actually making the world better, which I don't think it could be anyway, because, and here's a place you and I might disagree, is that part of the problem is that science gives arrogant people, not saying you're particularly arrogant. But
No, of course not.
Of course not. But gives arrogant people the illusion that they can actually control their surroundings, such that you get Richard Dawkins saying that truth is based on, we know what is true because science bases its spectacular claims of truth, or science bases its claims of truth on its spectacular ability to make matter and energy jump through hoops on command. So there's this presumption, this cause and effect drops out because he presumes you can have matter and energy jump through hoops on command without having an effect.
Well,
and there's a great line I read many, many years ago by John A. Livingston, which is, there is no surplus in nature. And one of the things that meant to me was, I mean, it's just so obvious that if you take fish out of the ocean, that's fish that someone else can't eat. And that's fish fish who can't reproduce. That's fish that is not there for someone else, that doesn't do whatever it is that they do in the ocean.
Okay, that's perfect. Derek, we are almost out of time, but I want to ask you one more thing. And it goes on that very thread you were talking about of cause and effect. And I, like many of my liberal, educated friends, we read the Huffington Post. And just the other day, there was a post by a scientist there that said that we can now bring extinct species back. Through great advances in science, we might drive them extinct, but we can bring them back. So we got short time, Derek, but let me know what you think about that in terms of cause and effect. Do you want to see a dodo bird running around Northern California?
No, but I want to see a dodo bird running around. I don't want to see it because I want to go there, but I want for there to be dodos again on the island where they should be. And that's not an excuse to have cloning technology, but with this terrible technology, I'm not a purist. I actually don't care why they come back. I just want passenger pigeons and dodo birds. And I understand that this could be used as a rationale to further drive them extinct, but with 200 species a day going extinct, they don't need the rationale. They've got all they need. So anything that can go the right direction, I actually, and this may surprise some people, but I actually don't have, I want for those animals back.
Well, Derek, I applaud you for having the courage to come on here and get slammed in a debate with Dr. Jim. Everyone, Derek Jensen's work can be found at derekjensen.org. Derek, thank you very much. And if you hold on to the line, I can send you a free Dr. Jim special Higgs boson shirt just for your very collection.
Thank you.
Phew! What a show. You know, it's sometimes hard for me, Smarties, to have someone on the air who just clearly doesn't quite get it, you know? And we had two of those episodes today. We had Rupert Sheldrake and
Derek Jensen both tried to come on and challenge materialist Dr. Jim, and both fell flat on their faces. But they'll be back, I'm sure. You can check out Rupert Sheldrake's work. Just Google him, YouTube him, you know, all the hip things. Derek Jensen, loved having him on the air. You can check his stuff out at derekjensen.org. Well, that about does it, Smarties, for episode 2. I'm already planning episode 3. So tune in the first Tuesday of every month, right here at 2 p.m., to find this work. Stay skeptical, Smarties. I'm going to send you out with one final hurrah. This is WGXE 90.7, Reasonable Radio, signing off. Remember, Smarties, Reasonable Radio is a parody. Dr. Jim's not actually out there riding his unicycle to his laboratory or teaching science at a distinguished online university. That's right, Smarties. Sadly enough, as we return to unreasonable programming, we can all pray, wish, that someday soon, with our thinking power combined, reason and science, finally, once and for all, will rule this crazy world.